So our next speaker is Axel Bruns. He's with the Creative Industry faculty at QUT, this is Queensland University of Technology. He's also the author of Gate Watching, Collaborative Online News Production, which was printed in 2005 by Peter Lang Press. And then one more plug, which is he is the editor of The Uses of Blogs, which is also by Peter Lang Press, and that came out in 2006. Axel's presentation is called Prod Usage Towards a Broader Framework for User-Led Content Creation.
Okay, thanks very much, and really what a fantastic project to follow on from. I think it's really particularly good that we're back-to-back here, because a lot of what you've done in this project is speaks very closely to what I'm talking about, and is actually a really good example for what I'm talking about as well. I'm kind of at the other end of where you are. I think I'm sort of at the end of the party bit at the moment, because I'm actually writing a book about this at the moment, and so this is quite hard for me at the moment to try and condense down the 200,000 words or so I've got written into 15 minutes. I'll try and do my best, and hopefully that'll help me condense the 200,000 words I've written into the actual 130 something words that are required. So we'll see. I'm wanting to zoom out really quite a ways from projects like this, which are, I think, examples for a much wider trend that's going on right now. And you know, we've heard about it in terms of Web 2, we've heard about it in terms of social software and various other terms that are floating around. And so far, I haven't really found anything that really describes exactly what's going on there particularly well. So I'm offering my own term here in the form of producers, and I'll talk about that. I'll introduce you to this idea and the reason that I see for it as being necessary. Obviously, there's a multitude of things. You've probably all seen graphics like this. That's just a collage of some of the logos of all these wonderful sites that are doing something around social software. That's not by me, but by someone on Flickr, which is, of course, another example for this sort of thing. It happens in all sorts of areas, as you see there, and well beyond this as well. These are just a few of the sites, a few of the best known sites, perhaps, of what's going on here. What they've all got in common, I think, is that the traditional sort of idea of production, whether in an explicitly commercial industrial environment or more generally as content production, I don't think quite apply anymore. I don't think that the word actually fits anymore for what's going on, because production, the way we've experienced it over the last 100 or so years, I guess, in the height of the industrial economy, really presumes that there's this sort of trichotomy of producer, distributor, and consumer, that they're fairly separate parts, and that the power between them is distributed quite unevenly as well. The producer creates something that gets distributed, and we as consumers are essentially consuming it. We're using it, we're buying it, we're doing whatever we want with it, but we don't really have a huge deal of input really back into the production processes. Best exemplified in the old model of the Ford Motor Company, any color you like as long as it's black. That's the sort of traditional approach, which was taken, of course, very much for reasons of efficiency and for keeping the costs low. Even more recently, of course, through market research and other tools of trying to make sure that that products have more input from the users, even that doesn't really remove that power imbalance between producers and consumers. It just really helps producers gain more market intelligence from their ultimate consumers. So as we move beyond this, as we move to these wonderful user-led spaces of content creation and whatever else is going on there, what's actually happening there? Is it the sort of finally the emergence of the prosumer that Alvin Toffler talked about? Is it the citizen consumer that John Hartley talks about? Is it pro-am production? Is it really the emergence of customer-made products or whatever we want to call them? Are the customers now just becoming producers? And are forming, as Trend Watching calls it, a new generation C, a creative generation. Is it simply a marketing ploy? Is it just another way for companies to harness the hive, as J.C. Hertz talks about it in the context of The Sims? 90% of The Sims, of course, is now created by the users. So is it really just Max's riding high on the waves of all this wonderful content production, but it's still a producer actually making the money? Now, there are aspects of all of this in there, but I don't think it actually quite goes far enough. If you look at some of the spaces of user-led content production, as we might call them, if you look at something like the Wikipedia, what's actually going on there, I don't think is actually production anymore. I don't think it's production in the traditional sense of the term. And it's not about products in the traditional sense of the term. Some of you might have come across Clay Shirky writing, for example, that Wikipedia is not a product in itself overall, but it's a process for content creation. I think that comes much closer to this issue. If you compare, and I've only got 15 minutes, so I'll run through this quite quickly, but if you compare the traditional sort of production model with what's happening in something like the Wikipedia or in something like open source or in many other of these spaces, what's actually going on here is that we're moving away from products and towards something altogether different. Products, whether that's Microsoft's Windows as a product, as a package that you can buy, literally a package you can buy, or whatever else, or the Britannica, for example, as well, as a series of a set of books you can buy if you really want to. They are made to exist in discrete versions. And what the producer actually tells us as they're producing this is that this is all that we can do right now. This is a complete product. This is the complete package, quite literally. And here it is for you to buy. And when you buy it, it'll be perfect and you never have to change it again. And you know that's obviously not the case, as we all know. And consumers, of course, are seen basically just as consumers. Again, Clay Shirky talks about them as the giant more at the other side of the process, basically just taking all this stuff in, using it up, and then buying the next round of products when the ones that they bought are used up or hopelessly out of date. And again, I think the basic business, of course, is really the sale of copyright products. They're selling you stuff. They're selling you a Microsoft Windows package or whatever. But if you're looking at open source, if you're looking at Wikipedia, if you're looking at all these other environments, that's actually not the case anymore. Wikipedia, of course, is constantly available. It's constantly new. It's constantly the latest version of whatever it is, good or bad. What you see in any one page in the Wikipedia is the latest version of edits that someone has made. It's not some sort of approved version. It's not some final version, certainly. It's really just the temporary artifact of the ongoing process, whether that's been temporarily improved or temporarily made worse by the latest edit is another question, but it's simply an artifact of an ongoing process. And the process actually becomes iterative. It becomes evolutionary, if you like. It's just a gradual evolution or devolution in some cases of content, of course. It gradually gets better or worse and forms essentially kind of a layer that's quite similar to the medieval palimpsest, a repeatedly overwritten text of layers that in the case of the Wikipedia, of course, you can very directly look at as well, look at all the different layers, look at all the different historical versions of this thing, as well as all the writing in the margins through the discussion pages and so on. And what's actually happening here is that really content, products become artifacts of an ongoing process, and the process is foregrounded. The product, the final outcome, is background because there is no final outcome. There's only ever a temporary stage which is up for review, is up for change further and further. And what I'm really looking to do with all of this is to identify in those spaces that seem to work particularly well, that seem to be particularly productive, if you like, particularly creative in creating all this stuff, what are the core characteristics? What are the core principles, in a sense, that they're subscribing to? And what does this tell us also for new products like yours, for example, in terms of how we best set them up to give them the best chance of being successful? And these four, and I'm still formulating these exactly, but these four, to me, seem to be the key principles of these spaces. They're open to anyone to participate. As Michel Ballon says, they're equipotential. They don't assume that everyone's equal and everyone's got the equal capability of participating, but they're assuming that everyone has something to contribute, whatever it might be, small or large, just a comma changed here or there in the Wikipedia, or a whole new entry on quantum physics. And what they contribute is open to evaluation by the community overall. They are therefore then also based on a fluid hierarchy rather than a fixed hierarchy of participants. They're not working under an industrial model where you've got someone at the top deciding what gets done and how it gets done, but it's actually the community organizing itself and assigning temporary leaders to temporary problems that emerge. So the governance is very much ad hoc, an ad hocracy, as Jenkins has recently called it, and as Toffler also called it. The products, the outcomes that they create aren't products anymore, they're artifacts. They're continuously unfinished, necessarily unfinished, always up for change and review and further development. The process itself is necessarily always continuing. And of course, all of this can only work legally anyway, if you're working with some sort of open content license, a Creative Commons license, an open source license or whatever, but still at the same time also allow individual participants to gain individual merit from their contribution. So it's not just all communal everything and no one gets rewarded, but the people who are participating strongly are are also seen, are also rewarded, are also reputed to be strong participants. So the value chain, if you like, turns around. It's actually the content that becomes more important. And continuously, in this ongoing, endless chain, there are people who are users in the first place, and then actively as further producers, as further creators of content, changing that content constantly in small and big ways. And that's why I start calling them producers rather than producers, a mixture, a hybrid between the two. And this then is what I call producage. So anyone really can participate. Anyone's invited at least to be a participant. The content is no longer a product. It is an artifact. It's an ongoing, involved in an ongoing process of content creation. You can't even extract usage and production anymore. They're part of the same process. They're necessarily interlinked. In some spaces, more so than others. In the environments of Amazon or you know, the page rank of Google itself, for example, the very act of using, of course, creates new linkages. And in your case, perhaps as well, if you trace the linkages that the tracks that people follow, interesting narratives might emerge from that you might want to track and then present to people as well, saying, hey, so many people went through this. There must be an interesting pathway there. And of course, really, this whole distinction between producers, distributors, and consumers just doesn't exist anymore. It just falters. And in the end, all of us are more or less directly involved as producers. Maybe we even form this famous Generation C. And so the value chain, if you like, turns into something like this, which is not a chain anymore, of course, but something entirely different. If this looks a little bit like a Petri dish, that's probably quite appropriate, because we're actually talking about culture, of course, here. And I don't want to take this simile too far, but essentially, of course, cultures in the case of the Petri dish also start with someone injecting some kind of idea as a starting point, a seed, a spore, whatever it is, to get the process started. In the same way that, you know, Linus Torvalds starts the development of Linux by posting up a very incomplete kernel, or people in Wikipedia sometimes rely on some outside materials to get started on developing their pages. So there's some seed there, and then around this, content grows and community grows, and it has certain outputs as well. It develops certain things. I won't go into too much detail here. You can see this in the paper itself, of course, but essentially what's happening here is very much a cultural process, a social process, a community-based process, necessarily so. And out of this emerges content as much as emerge, temporary at least, leaders of these communities. In fact, what emerges is perhaps something that with Pierre Lévy we might call collective intelligence. Now, collective intelligence, again, doesn't mean that everyone participates in the same way in this. But there are, you know, people in these communities sort of act as synapses, if you like, as the nodes within this collective brain as well, participating together. And some interesting questions as well as answers emerge out of this, I think. What's the creative potential? I think there's a strong creative potential for these sorts of collaborations. I know many of you have much more experience in creative collaboration than I do. But this sort of the distributed collaboration that spaces like these enable is extremely strong and is extremely interesting, and in fact allows for the emergence of new forms of grassroots and vernacular creativity that also serve a kind of a harking back to more traditional folk cultures. Again, we're getting away from the industrial moment of individual producers, individual creators who sell their stuff commercially, who get distributed commercially. We're getting back to much more of a shared cultural and creative approach, perhaps. Maybe we're also getting to, we're also having to reassess the work of labor in this environment. These sites, of course, rely on communities of interest, communities of taste, communities of enthusiasm. And to some extent, that's also perhaps their greatest weakness. So how can we actually sustain that enthusiasm to make these communities themselves sustainable? What about intellectual property? Again, I've talked about the reliance on open content licensing. What about trust and authority of these sites? How can we trust? And to some extent, I think the communal evaluation, of course, takes care of that to some extent. It's very much a probabilistic model. It relies on the community overall having enough eyes to run over this to identify the worst offenders. But it also relies on all of us as users, of course, to constantly keep looking back over the edit histories, for example, over the process of development for any of this content to identify whether or not there were particular biases, particular problems, particular malicious interventions, for example, in the model as well. And what it allows, perhaps, is the emergence of new cultural, new social, new economic structures And that's, I think, quite an important and a possibility, but also something we really need to investigate far more. I'll leave it there. I'm out of time, but please feel free to read the paper. I'm looking forward to your questions as well. Quick plug, more information on the blog as well, if you like.
Thank you, Axel. Are there questions?
Hi, my name is Alex Aris from the University of Maryland, and I'm a PhD candidate there. I'm working for a benchmark on network application among the subjects. I have it's a very interesting topic for me, and how these social communities emerge. Is there a, well, my knowledge is limited in this area, but is there a categorization of this kind of process? For example, which I would say Wikipedia is probably different from Flickr because Flickr is commercial and Wikipedia is not. And maybe there are a few people who are taking care of Wikipedia, but maybe they change. But maybe in Flickr they don't because they are business owners or something like that.
Something that I talk more about in the paper, and I need to say first, when I talk about Flickr, for example, not all Flickr is what I would describe as producers. Some parts of Flickr and large parts of Flickr are simply about, you know, putting up your stuff and sharing it, even just with your family or just putting up for yourself. As trend watching has called it, live caching, for example, just, you know, having a place to store your images. That's not what I'd call producers. I think where producers really kicks in is where people are forming communities on Flickr, for example, to share photos, to comment on one another's photos, to also work on one another's images. And that's becoming increasingly interesting as well. Similar with YouTube and other sites as well. Not all of that is producers, but where people are actually starting to work together to comment, to remix and so on, then it becomes producers. The commercial frameworks for these sites are incredibly interesting, and there's a lot of research still to be done about it. On the one hand, I think we're seeing a lot of this is actually part of the overall move from production to service industries. You know, and open source is a trailblazer for that. In open source, you don't make money from producing and selling software. You make money from servicing the software and the communities around of open source. So a company like Red Hat isn't really technically making its money from selling open source software. It's selling its money from packaging that together and selling it as CDs or providing consultancy and so on. So similar, I think in a similar way too, environments like Flickr, for example, what they're doing is obviously not selling the content. They're selling the space for the content, the platform for sharing the content, the platform for producers. And I think the question of platforms for this sort of producer engagement, that's really a major growth area from a commercial point of view and from many other points of view. And I think, you know, that's something that we need to consider very carefully because it does enable, you know, it does enable environments that are incredibly productive, incredibly interesting in terms of what gets done there. They also enable the hijacking of whole communities by locking people into these spaces as well. That's a real problem.
I would be interested to see, maybe they are already available or maybe they are in progress, but I would be interested to see some simple, clear principles or guidelines that foster such communities, for example, maybe. That maybe privacy or users can share or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. The four principles really that I've put up there, that's for me right now, that's sort of the core ones I can identify. They're really shared across many of these communities. There are many more that are specific to the particular type of content they're dealing with, for example, particular other cultural issues, for example, as well. You know, whether you're addressing an American audience, a Chinese audience, and a European audience or whatever. But I think the four, to me, seem to be quite universal across these spaces. I'm not sure I'm quite formulating them right yet, and I invite everyone's participation in formulating them right.
So we have time for one more question.
Thank you.
My name is John Schell. I'm here from Rochester Institute of Technology. Just want to say, I think that your joke about culture is no joke. You know, if the industrial era was the sequel to the agricultural era, we are now, I think, entering a post-industrial era, which in fact, it's technologies for cultivating means, which actually are driving the show. And I think that's actually the, if you will, the motor behind what you're talking about.
Yep. Look, I have no problem. The joke about culture is really just half a joke, honestly. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so the joke continues.
Very nice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.